This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The race, who see who will be the Democrat in the November election, is still undecided for the 23rd Congressional District. It's a runoff between Gina Ortiz Jones and Rick Trevino. The winner of this runoff will face Republican incumbent Congressman Will Hurd. Early voting begins on May 14th, runs through the 18th. The runoff day is May 22nd. You have to be a Democrat to vote in the runoff. Today we have both candidates, Gina Ortiz Jones and Rick Trevino, and you can ask them the tough questions. Call in at 210-614-8980, email us at thesource@tpr.org, and tweet at us at @tprsource. And here are the rules. These must be open-ended questions, something that both candidates can answer. No personal attacks. Don't call in and make a speech. Now, I don't want to have to cut you off, but I will. Each candidate gets 2 minutes to answer each question, but if one makes an accusation or tries to characterize the other's campaign, we're going to have to cut off that candidate and give the other candidate a chance to rebut that and defend themselves. Again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. You can email the source at tpr.org. And let's start off with opening statements. We flipped a coin earlier, and Rick Trevino started off. He won, and he's going to go ahead and start with the opening statements. You have a minute.
Thank you, David, for this opportunity. Thank you to TPR. I've been a longtime listener, 89.1, and thank you for what you guys have done here covering the important stories here in San Antonio, across Texas. My name is Rick Trevino. I'm a U.S. congressional candidate for Texas' 23rd District. I was born in Laredo, Texas. My mother's from Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. My father's from Laredo. And for the past 14 years, San Antonio has been my home. I recently completed my master's in educational leadership from Trinity University to be a principal. But you're listening to a teacher, and it was as a teacher that I got my first lesson in poverty. Every single day teaching on the east side, I saw the struggles of working people. I saw the struggles of their parents and their community. Many of my students turned their back on their dreams because of college affordability. And I saw the struggles of their parents, some of them working 2-3 jobs, and many of them dealing with real healthcare problems. And that's why I'm running for U.S. Congress, to help them, to help you. And my platform is designed to help out the working people. And
okay, now let's go over to Gina Ortiz Jones, and she gets a minute to do her opening statement.
Hi, yes, and thank you also for hosting this. It's an important discussion. My name is Gina Ortiz Jones, Democratic candidate for Texas's 23rd Congressional District. You know, if there's anything that I know personally and professionally, it's that talent is universal, opportunity is not. My story starts 40 years ago. It's when my mother came to this country. She graduated from the number one university in the Philippines, but came here chasing the American dream. So, you know, my younger sister and I, who she raised by herself, were reminded every single day that our trajectory in life was in no small part to being born in this great country. It's why I've pursued public service. And it was really, you know, the election of 2016, that night when I knew that my time in public service may have to be different, you know, as a first-generation American, but as also somebody that has served in countries where women and minorities are targeted, when good people don't step up, when they see their institutions under attack. I know what happens in these countries. So to think that those would be happening in my own country, but also to think that the opportunities that enabled me to grow up healthy, get an education, and serve my country would be under attack from this administration, I knew I had to step up and serve in a different way.
All right, now let's go to questions. And we've got some callers on the phone already. Let's go to Luis. This is going to go first to Gina. And Gina Ortiz Jones, and you go first with Luis. Luis, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you guys for taking my call, and thank you guys for running. It's exciting to be a part of this process. My question has to do with the current situation my family is actually going through right now. My mom has an appointment tomorrow to renew her green card. She's been in the States for over 40 years. She no longer knows the country. She's from Mexico, obviously. And just recently, the last week, she's been in the hospital. She's been in Methodist Hospital with a severe bronchial infection, lots of breathing treatments. We're looking at thousands of dollars in medical bills.
So, Luis, your question is about immigration?
My question is about immigration and healthcare.
Okay, let's limit this to immigration. We'll get to healthcare later on. So immigration, of course, is a big national topic right now. Let's go to Gina Ortiz Jones. You get 2 minutes, and then Rick Trevino will respond. You get 2 minutes as well.
Yeah, so I think you know, as a first-generation American, I think I do see this a little bit uniquely, again, having been reminded that my trajectory in life was in no small part to being born in this country, and it's why my mom bet on herself and came here chasing the American dream. And so I am concerned that, you know, this administration's policies and the silence of so many Republicans on immigration and forgetting the fact that we are a nation of immigrants, and it's actually that diversity that makes us strong. As I've traveled the district, though, I'm also, you know, concerned when I talk to local elected officials as well as, you know, in law enforcement, that this the discussion that we're currently having around immigration and the uncertainty in no small part around, you know, the DACA program is causing, it's becoming a public safety issue, right? I mean, you've got communities now that are not calling the exact institutions that are set up to keep them safe. And that's because they don't know who's going to show up on the at their door. And in this district, which is, you know, majority minority, when there is lack of trust between the communities and the institutions that are set up to protect them, that's when, you know, that's when we have public safety concerns. So I think we need certainty. We need to keep the promise that we made to 800,000 young people. 4,000 dreamers alone live in this district. I think we also need to recognize that, you know, the wall obviously would be a huge waste of money, and there are a ton of other ways to spend $50 billion in this district alone. And as I talk to, you know, and I talk to local elected officials, you can't talk about the current or future of Eagle Pass without talking about Piedras Negras. You can't talk about Presidio without talking about Ojinaga, right? And so, you know, the wall would decimate economies and frankly be just a daily reminder that we gave in to hate. So I would be adamant that we do not need a wall, and we need to reinvest, frankly, in smart and healthy kids, not a smart wall.
Okay, now, Rick Trevino, your answer on where do you stand on immigration reform?
Thank you for your call, Luis, and I hope and pray justice for your mother. What you're looking at for this issue of immigration to be really understood, we have to understand it in the era of mass incarceration. You've seen a really big push from the private prison industry to fill the coffers of both the Republicans and the Democrats to lead on this mission. You know, the mission of ICE and HSI has been now to tear families apart. And GEO Group and Core Civic, which used to be known as CCA, gives a lot of money to both parties, and they're the ones that are driving this mission. So if we really want to take on immigration reform, we have to talk about it in an honest way. You know, the Obama administration deported about 300,000 people a year, about 1,000 a day. So we have to be skeptical of the leadership that we have right now in Washington. And that's why I'm running for Congress, to make sure that we have the perspective of someone who's lived on the frontera. You know, just like Gina, I'm a first-generation American, but mine's a little different. My mother's from Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. I have family in Mexico. I've taught students that are DACA recipients. I've taught students whose parents are undocumented, and I know the fear in the community. So what we have to do is first, focus the American people on really what's going on. You have people that are donating to both parties that are creating this problem. If there's actually a net decrease in migration here in the United States, and it's so unfortunate, the only issue that's ever talked about my district, District 23, is immigration. And if we continue to only frame our district in terms of that issue, the only type of allocations of money that are ever going to come into this district has to do with securing those borders. And nothing's ever going to come for our healthcare system, our education system, our infrastructure, which all desperately need real help. So I support a pathway to citizenship for not just DACA recipients, but their parents. I also hope that it would extend TPS status for those who need it. But what we have to do is have an honest conversation about it. This is a problem that is being exacerbated because of the era of mass incarceration. All the United States knows how to do is to put people in jail, tear families apart.
Listen to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We have a candidate forum for House District 23, the runoff for the Democratic candidates. Gina Ortiz-Jones is with us, as is Rick Trevino. Both are candidates in that runoff. Let's go back to the phone lines, and this is Jerry. Jerry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I'm calling to ask about health care because currently I have family members and myself, and we don't have any health care right now. And I heard something about, you know, Medicaid expansion that happened in some states under the ACA, and I have family members up north, and they didn't really cover them. So I'm asking, like, what will you do to help fix health care, like expand Medicare more? Or maybe I heard about a Medicare for All thing. I want to know what they stand on that.
Jerry, thank you for your call. And Rick Trevino, you have 2 minutes to answer Jerry's question.
It's a great question, Jerry. You're talking to someone who is a big supporter of a Medicare for All healthcare system. Both people on the left and the right support this idea. And the reason is because of the problem with our healthcare system, that it's so expensive. Medicare for All will cover every man, woman, and child in this country As a right, like it should be. Other countries across the planet have done this as well, and it's time the United States joined them, because there are so many people that are sick, that are dying, that are poor as a direct result of poor health care. And the problems with the ACA was that, you know, we didn't get the Medicaid expansion here in Texas, and it was very susceptible to right-wing obstruction. So what we have to do is first remove, you know, and really remove these politicians who take money from the insurers, take money from the pharmaceuticals, who take money from these huge hospital conglomerates, and put in people that are really looking out for the working class. And that's what a Medicare for All system will do. It will also lower prescription drug prices. A lot of people in my district, they get their medicine across the border because it's so much, you know, more affordable. We pay twice as much for our pharmaceuticals than any other country in the world, and our healthcare outcomes are poor. So I am a staunch supporter of Medicare for All, and actually I would like Gina to clarify some of her positions, because when she started off, she was someone that supported a Medicare for All, but in front of MSNBC, she's talking about access and affordability. Her TV ads are all about access and affordability. So where does she stand?
That's an accusation. You're characterizing her campaign. So that's the end of your statement. Let's go over to Gina Ortiz-Jones, and she is going to clarify where she is on that.
Yeah. So as Rick has heard me say numerous times, as it pertains to healthcare, I think immediately we have to protect the ACA, right? We have to understand the reality in which we're in. So protect the ACA. I mean, are there some ways to improve it? Certainly, but Republicans are intent on repealing it with no replacement. I think there are some immediate steps we can also take, for example, negotiating on pharma prices. But I think ultimately in the long-term economic and national security of this country, we need to move to a system that covers everybody, right? Medicare for All is a system that does that, and that's why I support it.
And do you want to keep going?
Certainly. I mean, my thoughts on healthcare are, the story of my mother who when I came back from Iraq, it was the decision for why I left the military when I did, because she had told me that while I was deployed, she was diagnosed with cancer. And so, look, I knew I'd have a lot of jobs, but I would have one mom. So I came back and was with her during that time. But I must admit that one of the first thoughts that I had when she told me that she was diagnosed with cancer was, you know, is this going to bankrupt us? Not just her, but my sister and I also, because obviously we're not going to let my mother, you know, go through that by herself. And I can't imagine, you know, thankfully she had health insurance to help with that. But I mean, that to think that was the second thought that came to my mind when my mother told me that she was diagnosed with cancer. This is also, you know, as I've traveled the district and spent a lot of time with our community health clinics, right? These are a key provider of health care in the district. I mean, to go to Presidio and to understand that there's only two EMS that serve that community, right? I mean, to understand, you know, the healthcare needs in a community where the nearest hospital is 80 miles away, right? There, the intersection between how do we think about, you know, the services that are provided in our communities, as well as the infrastructure that we need to make these services a reality. I mean, there's a community health clinic in the district that has had a vacancy for a health provider, a full-time physician rather, for 3 years, right? So it's not just about making sure the clinics are also struggling with talent and bringing that and ensuring that these underserved communities are served the way they need to be. And that requires investments in infrastructure.
Okay, so we have the two candidates here in the studio at TPR talking about, running for the Democratic nomination in November against Republican Will Hurd. He's the incumbent. So let me just ask, this is basically a job interview. And so just ask each of you, and you'll go first, Gina. Yeah. Ortiz-Jones, you have 2 minutes to kind of just explain why you are the best candidate to get on the November ballot, and including what you can do for the district, and sure, why you would have the best chance to beat Hurd in November.
Yeah, so, you know, I think public service is a high calling. Then there's nothing more important than the nation's work. And I talk a lot about opportunity because I think fundamentally, right, a member of Congress does three things. I think they create opportunities, they protect opportunities, or they erase opportunities, right? They do that with their voting record, and they do that with their record of silence, which as we're seeing with this administration, can be as dangerous as egregious. And so, you know, I based on my personal experiences versus my professional experiences, having worked in national security for as long as I have, but also I think, you know, you don't grow up on the west side of San Antonio. You know, I went to John Jay High School, a high school where you start with 900 and only 500 graduate, you know, being raised by a single mother, having served in the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. All of these things shape your thoughts, not only on public service, but also the pipeline of talent into public service, right? And I fundamentally think that, you know, this is about ensuring that everybody has a shot, right? Everybody can reach their potential. And that very much depends on how people, you know, in Congress vote, and and how they understand the needs of the district. So I look forward to bringing, you know, my personal as well as professional experiences. And I think, you know, I can do that. I think, you know, the key is going to be, I think we've got to have somebody that can neutralize, you know, Will Hurd's perceived strength. You can ask the guy what time of day it is. He will find a way to tell you he was in the CIA for 9.5 years. And so being able to credibly show how his voting record and his actions are actually contrary to national security, but then also, you know, fighting for the district in a way that this district represents, right? Talking about healthcare, talking about immigration reform. I mean, why do I know more about where Will Hurd is on cybersecurity and I know nothing about where he is on the citizenship question for the census? Like, these are the things that we need to know about from Will Hurd that he refuses to talk about. And they're, you know, his priorities continue to be misaligned with the needs of the district.
Okay, now, Rick Trevino, you have 2 minutes to explain why you think you would be the best candidate to be on the November ballot to beat Will Hurd as a Democrat.
I think I'm best suited to lead this district and best suited to lead the Democratic Party in November is because, first, how I'm campaigning. I think to give you some context, I was able to beat a DCCC-backed candidate in Jay Huelings, who raised and spent over $500,000, and I did it on small working-class contributions. Raised a little over $22,000, about $2.64 a vote. So you're talking to someone that's only beholden to the people of District 23. There's no one, there are no D.C. organizations or institutions that are funding me. I got no super PACs giving me money. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at an era where basically everybody who's in Washington, D.C. is represented by someone who takes money from the oligarchs and the donor class of this country. And right there, that undermines the ability of these people to represent you. Will Hurd is just an example of that on the right. He takes money from the Koch brothers and some of the most powerful Republican donors in this country. So he's just a front for them. And I'm here fighting for working class people. So if I'm there in November, what I'm going to be able to do is talk about issues that really working people care about. I'm not going to stick to the D.C. and D.C. and the establishment framing of issues. I'm actually going to talk about what people want. Ever since the start of this race, I've been a policy-oriented, issue-oriented candidate, leading on Medicare for All, leading on the economy. I don't equivocate. I know exactly what I mean when I talk about fighting for a $15 living wage, free public colleges, universities, combating climate change, getting big money out of politics. And if the whole thing is to send someone who's to combat Will Hurd's perceived strength, I truly believe that, you know, right now we do need to be talking about what's going on in the military. John Bolton, Gina Haspel, CIA director, possible Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. I don't think the media has really vetted our positions on the military, and I think Gina's probably going to share a lot of the same position that Will Hurd does.
All right. Well, okay, we're out of time on that. This gives us an opportunity to respond to that. So let's get let's talk about President Donald Trump.
Sure.
And whether or not you see having this position as a congressman from the 23rd Congressional District, how you would see the White House and what Donald Trump does for the America. So, and it's your turn to go first. Rick Trevino, you have 2 minutes.
Well, Donald Trump has, you know, he's a charlatan. He ran his full populist campaign. He said he was going to drain the swamp, but all he brought in were the same people he was railing against. He was railing against Ted Cruz about Goldman Sachs, and who surrounds him? Who's surrounding him? A bunch of people from Goldman Sachs. So what you saw was basically a liar, charlatan that is doing awful things for the American people. The rhetoric that's coming out of the White House is so demonizing, especially to people like me. I'm a Mexican American. It was so awful to hear on day one him call Mexicans murderers, and for him to suggest a solution to this problem being a wall, and to see the whole GOP stay silent on this and not be outraged. That should have been a disqualification on day one. So what you're going to get is someone who's going to be vocal against that agenda. But kind of going back to what I was talking about, right now Donald Trump is being surrounded by some very dangerous people that are going to take advantage of this buffoon who really doesn't have any context about history or really understands what's going on in the world. John Bolton has been pushing for war in Iran for a long time, since the early aughts. Gina Haspel, who might be our potential CIA director, she literally tortured human beings in Thailand. She ran a CIA black site. She ran the CIA's extraordinary rendition program. And Will Hurd thinks that she's a good choice. Mike Pompeo has entertained some right-wing conspiracy theories and also has been pushing a war with Iran as well. And we are not talking about, as a Democratic Party, about the way we are conducting our foreign policy. Drones, the war in Yemen, our support of Saudi Arabia in that manner, our extended war all across the world that's being led by JSOC. I'm curious to understand where Gina stands on these positions.
All right, so let's give her a chance then, since you brought that up. So Gina Ortiz-Jones, you're also the candidate in the runoff for the Democratic nomination for the 23rd Congressional District. First off, let me give you just a chance to respond before we get into your time for talking about how you would deal with the Donald Trump White House. Let me give you some time to just sort of respond to accusations by Rick Trevino that somehow you and Will Hurd are somehow aligned in some areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I mean, that's a not based in any kind of fact, right? There's actually no, there's no fact of that at all, and I would be interested to see what that is based on, if nothing more than the assumption that somebody that previously served in the intelligence community, that you have to think one way. I mean, I think, not only that, but it's the assumption that you think one way, and then the underlying assumption of his comments, which is that you cannot somehow, again, seek public service, right? And I think it shouldn't be super surprising that people, you know, that have worked in national security, and I have done that in and out of uniform, and I've worked in countries where when good people don't step up, when democratic institutions are under threat, we know what happens. And that's exactly, those are my motivations for seeking this office. And so, you know, I think it's actually quite disrespectful to say that somebody that has, you know, put their life on the line for this country can somehow not again seek public service. And that's exactly what Rick is insinuating, and that's disrespectful and it's short-sighted.
Get to the question about how you would deal if you get elected to this office. If you win the runoff and then you win the November election and become the congressperson from the 23rd Congressional District, how you would deal with the Donald Trump White House?
I mean, I think, so there is, as we've seen, right, there's the voting record, but there's also the record of silence. I mean, he is silent on so many issues. I mean, I think, you know, if you really care about keeping this country safe, then, I mean, I would have expected, you know, Will Hurd to be much more of a leader in holding the Russians accountable for what they did to our 2016 election and what they are looking forward to doing, you know, moving forward. And so I think holding the Russians accountable, you've got to work with the administration. But, I mean, you've got to be, when you have the expertise, you've got to be vocal and lead on these issues in a way that really secures not only, you know, certainly our cyber networks, but also the entire country. And so I look forward to bringing that. But I think also, you know, as a veteran and being able to ask the tough questions that are actually going to hold people like John Bolton, you know, in check. I mean, it's people that have the experience. You know who doesn't want to go to war? Veterans, right? I mean, it's us. We know what it takes. We know what's on the line. And it's us that can ask the tough questions to ensure that, you know, we're only doing things that are in the absolute, you know, necessary and vital interest of this country. So I look forward to bringing that experience.
Okay, our phone lines are open. If you've got a question for our candidates for the runoff for the Democratic nomination for the 23rd Congressional District, they are Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rick Trevino. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is a district that covers San Antonio down to the border over to El Paso, a lot of border area, a lot of Rio Grande there. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, and the source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've got the two candidates who made the runoff for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. House District 23, Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rick Trevino. We're asking them the questions. We're finding out it's basically a job interview, who's going to win this nomination and who goes off to face Will Hurd, the Republican incumbent, in November. And we've got phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. We're also on Facebook Live. You can look at us there and you can shoot questions to us from Facebook Live. I got a question from an email. This is from Xavier and says, does any candidate accept money from the NRA or will in the future? And let me expand on this question because it seems pretty like a short answer. So what do you think about where we are right now with questions about the political clout of the NRA and what's happening with these Parkland kids? So let me start off with Gina Ortiz-Jones, if you got 2 minutes.
Yeah. So my thoughts on, so one, I am not taking any money from the NRA. I would not take any money from the NRA. I'm very proudly endorsed by the Giffords PAC, as well as Moms Demand Action, receiving their candidate distinction. And, you know, I've been very vocal about my support for common sense gun reform. And it's in no small part shaped by my experience in the military. You know, before I deployed to Iraq, I was trained in the 9mm. And so that was not only for my own safety, but for the safety of everyone else around me, and obviously the extensive background check that I went through to receive a security clearance, and then obviously very heightened security clearance, having served as an intelligence officer. So, I mean, I which is why, you know, my stance on this is very clear. One, universal background checks on every gun transfer, right? Two, closing the boyfriend loophole. There are some loopholes that allow, folks that should not have access to a weapon, and they're granted that. This is in no small part, though, based on the disproportionate effects of gun violence against women, right? Domestic violence plus a gun in the home means a woman is 5 times more likely to be shot and killed. Every 16 hours, a woman is shot and killed by a current or former partner, right? So we have to understand the disproportionate effects against women and women of color. Frankly, if I saw the weapon in Iraq, I do not want to see it in Target. And we need to, ban access to high-capacity magazines. I've been very clear about that, which is why, again, I think I've received the support that I have. I think to your point about, the courage of the Parkland students, I think, they are leading the discussion in a way that, unfortunately, legislators like Will Hurd and others that do take money from the NRA have not had the moral courage to do so, in part because they're beholden to, to those campaign donations and not to the actual voters. And it's that sad because, again, this is, universal background checks alone. This is an issue upon which we have a lot of agreement by the American people, and the fact that we haven't been able to even get that far shows you just how distorted the conversation is based on money from special interests like the NRA.
Okay, Rick Trevino.
I'm not taking 1 cent from the NRA. Actually, when I got their questionnaire, I threw it in the trash. It was pretty awesome. Those people are some of the most dangerous and people that are, at least politically in the United States of America, they give money to both the left and the right. Here in San Antonio, both Will Hurd and Henry Cuellar both take money from the NRA. They both have, over A ratings on this. And you're looking at someone that's who's never, ever going to play that game with the NRA. If anything, I really do think the NRA should be, eliminated. I do think they are a terrorist organization. And I say that not just because of hyperbole, but I say that because, we've seen over the last few decades, extreme gun violence across this country. And the people there that are protecting our right of these weapons to be, to be owned across the country and sold is the NRA. And a lot of the ideas that both Gene and I support, universal background checks, that was supported by Wayne LaPierre in the 90s. I mean, he was there testifying that he was in support of this. Obviously, politics has changed. I'm against, prohibiting people to have a history of domestic violence from purchasing a weapon. The stats that Gina just mentioned are absolutely true. If there's a weapon in a home and someone with a history of domestic violence, that weapon will be used probably on the children or the women in a relationship. What we have to recognize, though, is the only way things are going to change is when we get these people out of office. If there's an NRA-backed candidate in there, they have already put obstacles in the way of common sense gun reform. We saw after Sandy Hook, that was the moment there where I thought we were going to get real gun reform. But you saw, again, the only people that were saying no to this were NRA-backed candidates. So we have to understand the NRA's role in our political system, how much money they give. And then, quite frankly, these weapons, they shouldn't be present in any part of the world.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. And Andrew is on the line. And Andrew, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rick Trevino. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was actually hoping to probe the candidates about two issues. The first one being protecting citizens' internet privacy from organizations like the NSA or companies like Facebook that can have data breaches, and the second being whether they would support national legislation that would protect net neutrality.
Okay, Andrew, go ahead. And Rick Trevino, you have 2 minutes to talk about protecting internet privacy and preserving net neutrality, or bringing back net neutrality.
That's right. I'm a supporter of bringing back net neutrality. I think what happened in the FCC was abhorrent. You saw people that took a lot of money from the telecom communities that pushed that agenda in. Again, there's not one person that I met all across this district who thought that it was a good idea to repeal net neutrality. Again, that was all a D.C. thing. That was all about the corporate donors. And they got what they wanted. So now we have to fight back and make sure that we pass that legislation to make sure net neutrality is protected. In terms of, I think you bring up a great point in this era of of you know, social media and our reliance on it as a society, you know, we have to be skeptical of the power of the NSA and the power of these huge companies over our lives. You know, with Cambridge Analytics, I think what we saw was the ability of now private companies to manipulate our data to use basically political propaganda. They were successful in races in Africa, and they launched this type of system. And again, I'm talking about Cambridge Analytics here in the United States, and they were able to influence the race. And we have to be vigilant of this. Also, you mentioned the NSA. The Edward Snowden leak showed the NSA's huge, vast power that, again, was voted for by both Democrats and Republicans after the Patriot Act. I am very skeptical of the power of the NSA. There's a Fourth Amendment for a reason. And right now, the NSA could basically turn on any one of your phones, turn on the microphone on your phones. They could get your data whenever they want. And it really is scary, the power of the NSA. And what we have to do is pause and rein this in. What is going on? Why are we giving so much power to this agency? And at the same time, the way it's being used and abused, you know, what we're looking at is a really Orwellian kind of life and system society that we live in now. And I am against what the NSA has been doing, and I really want to rein in their power. And that's how I feel about it.
Okay, now let's go over to candidate Gina Ortiz-Jones.
Yeah, I think, I think always in all actions, you know, one, we're a country of laws. I think all of our actions need to match our highest ideals, right? So I think, you know, having worked in national security for 14 years, I mean, I know there are folks out there that are intent on attacking our way of life, destroying our way of life. And so, you know, they can do that by attacking the homeland, but I think they can also do that by causing us to think that we have to live in fear. Right, where we have to be watch out for our neighbor versus actually look out for our neighbor, which is how I would view protecting the homeland. I think, you know, this idea though of the discussion that we're having around consumer protections is obviously very important, and I think timely in light of the revelations with what's certainly happened with the 2016 elections, but also, you know, as these corporations grow much larger, and as that personal information becomes, it contributes to their profits based on how they use it. So I think, yes, we do have to have legislators, though, that are intent on ensuring, on protecting the public good and in creating some type of oversight over these corporations. I mean, I think the discussion that we're having now about data privacy, about increased transparency, right? How is this information being collected? Why, for what purpose? Who is it being shared with? I mean, clearer regulations on when a consumer can opt in and frankly opt out for when their information should not be collected nor shared. I think these are the types of things that we need corporations to work with legislators on and frankly be beholden to again, the consumers and not necessarily their shareholders. I think this ultimately goes back to this idea of accountability, though, and I think this discussion of ultimately what corporations are going to find themselves willing to do, it does go back to again who the legislators find themselves accountable to, and if they're receiving contributions from these larger organizations, like Will Hurd, and again Will Hurd is one of the people that voted to sell our browsing history again, right? So a necessary discussion in light of actions like Will Hurd's vote.
Okay, so you both are campaigning in this massive district, San Antonio, down to the border, over to El Paso. This is a unique area with the unique people. They have unique experiences. Can you kind of talk to me about what it's like to go out there and talk to people? What do the people want from their congressperson that you can provide for them that Will Hurd, since he's the person that you're trying to oppose, that he cannot provide? So can you talk about that? So Gina Ortiz-Jones, you have 2 minutes. You go first.
Yeah. I mean, as I travel the district, I mean, folks are hungry for somebody that is, one, going to represent their interests, fight for them. And I mean, Will Hurd, yes, he shows up in places, to his credit, he shows up in places where you don't expect to see him. But then he votes against the district, right? Whether it be on healthcare, whether it be on immigration, whether it be on education. And again, I can't say this enough. You know, the number of issues that are directly impacting this district upon which, Will Hurd is silent. I mean, folks are so hungry again for somebody that is going to understand the issues and really fight for them in a way that they deserve. This is, I can't tell you the number of times that I've traveled traveled throughout the district, and folks say, I haven't seen Will Hurd. I don't really know. I know he comes in here and he might talk about Ukraine, or he might talk about again issues that are are not relevant to the district, folks that I'm talking to, they want to know, why Will Hurd voted for this tax plan, right? Why vote for a tax plan that is going to gut Medicare by billions of dollars, understanding that, 10,000 people every day in this country turn 65, right? Why would he vote 9 times to repeal the ACA, right? Why does he not support a Clean Dream Act, understanding that there are 4,000 dreamers in this country alone? These are the types of questions. Frankly, as I travel the district, people have more questions about Will Hurd and his voting record and his priorities, again, because they're so misaligned with this district.
Okay, and now Rick Trevino, can you talk to me about what you experience on the campaign trail in that district, what the people tell you that what they want from their elected congressperson?
Well, what they're looking for is authentic representation, and who better to represent authentically than someone who's lived their life, that's been a working person just like them and has walked in those shoes, someone that's struggled living paycheck to paycheck and struggled paying for their health insurance or sending their kids to college. That's the worldview that's missing in Washington, D.C., the perspective of the working class, and that's what they're looking for. All across this district, I have run into people that don't know who really Will Hurd is, and that's this district has been gerrymandered to such an extent to where Will Hurd doesn't even have to interact with most of the district and still have a large voter base there, especially the north side of San Antonio that was, added on there to add some Republican votes to this very rural district. But, one thing I have been, what I've seen also is myself in the district, I was born on the border. I'm from that story. My mother's from Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, and I am a first-generation person just like Gina, and I see the legacy and our culture and our history all throughout the district. And what I see is a lot of people that are being oppressed too. I made it a point to walk the colonias of Eagle Pass, to walk the colonias in the winter garden area of District 23, to go to Socorro in the lower valley of El Paso. These are places that have been historically underrepresented. And you're also looking at people that vote every single year in every election, and they still have roads that are unpaved, no real internet, no real healthcare services. So what they're looking for is not just a Democrat or Republican, they're actually looking for someone to fight for them because they've done everything they could as a citizen and they're still not being represented. And I'm going in there not selling out. I'm not taking any money from any super PAC or for-profit PAC or lobbyist. I can't say that about my opponent. But what I'm providing is real authentic representation that's only beholden to them. And that's what they're looking for. Someone that's actually going to represent and not cynically pander to the Mexican-American community by adding Ortiz to their name right before this.
Okay, so that's kind of out of bounds. So so let's go over to Gina Ortiz-Jones. Yeah. You don't have to explain nothing, but just sort of, where are you on this?
Yeah, so my middle name is, always has been, Ortiz, right? Filipino tradition is for a child's middle name to be their mother's maiden name. So that's where Ortiz comes from. And anyone who has spent time with me, even an hour, knows how important my mother's influence has been on my life. And so, when she came to this country 40 years ago, she came with, frankly, her education, a willingness to work hard, a suitcase with a couple of belongings, and her name. I would not be here without my mother's example or her sacrifices. So it was important for me, for her to be on the ballot with me. When Rick is talking about taking money from special interest groups, maybe he thinks that the fact that Congress is, 80% male, maybe he thinks that's okay. Well, there's a lot of the district, a lot of this country that does not agree with that. And so, yes, I am being supported by Emily's List, an organization that helps women, pro-choice women, run for office. Yes, I am being supported by Vote Vets, an organization that helps veterans run for office. When you come from a background like mine, which I don't personally or professionally come from wealth, I was, again, raised by a single mother, right? Had it not been for that ROTC scholarship that took me to Boston University, I don't know where I'd be, right? So I am very thankful for the experiences that I've had. I look forward to bringing those in service to this district. But this idea that I'm taking special interest money to somehow equate Emily's List with the NRA or to somehow equate Vote Vets with the NRA is just disingenuous when all these organizations are trying to do is change the face of representation so it actually looks like the people that are being represented. I mean, it's just
okay. So back to the phone lines, and this is a call from Pete. And Pete, you're on the air, and you're going to shoot your question first to Rick Trevino. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys. First of all, thanks for taking my call, and I appreciate you guys coming out to talk. My issues are with the VA healthcare system. Mm. Speaking from experience, I've been going through some healthcare issues where I'm talking about years now on the same issues with no remedies. I'm having to go through all these really strange kind of sideline types of cures and remedies and things that the VA want me to do before they finally get to an actual real type of medication that really helps what I'm doing without any real dangers involved.
Right, Pete, thanks for the question. So the VA healthcare system, we've known there's been some turmoil in Washington, D.C. with who's going to be heading up the VA and also some questions about their use of painkillers. And let's go over to Rick Trevino to respond to that.
I think all of us are troubled to know that the personal doctor of Donald Trump is not going to be heading the VA, someone with no administrative experience. But yeah, you're looking at something I've been here in the district for a long time and in the city, and that's something that the you know veterans have been talking about, you know, having real healthcare access to healthcare. A lot of them have to travel hours and hours to come to San Antonio, you know, just to receive some regular benefits. And that's why I'm a big proponent of Medicare for All system. What this is going to do is, as a society, once we say that healthcare is a right of all people, then it's going to open the door to real investments into healthcare infrastructure. One thing that I've noticed all across this district is the reliance on rural healthcare systems. The Centro de Salud provides healthcare all across the Winter Garden area. And when I went to go visit one of those clinics, it was funny. They had real anxiety about their funds being cut. And at the same time, Democrats and Republicans in Washington, D.C. just voted to increase the budget of the Department of Defense by 16%. So these facilities could be run by a couple million dollars, and we are having a hard time finding funds to fully fund these healthcare systems. But at the same time, we have hundreds of billions of dollars just laying around to give to the biggest part of our budget. You know, it's all about priorities. So I want to move to a Medicare for All system that then the way it's going to help out veterans is that they could access healthcare anywhere that it's around them. They don't have to go to specific areas. But here's the thing. Veterans do deserve specific health care that is unique to their needs, unique to their life experiences, and we need to build more veteran healthcare systems all across this area. But in the meantime, we also have to allow these people to access their benefits, access their healthcare benefits all across. I'm also a big proponent of medicinal medical marijuana going towards that. I think a lot of veterans that I've spoken to are very scared to take these opioids because they've seen their brothers and sisters become addicted and they see their quality of life affected. So expanding the rural healthcare systems and yeah.
All right, out of time there. So Gina Ortiz-Jones, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this up. As a veteran myself, I remember some of the unique challenges that I faced in making that transition, right, from active duty to veteran, and in no small part, you know, what does my healthcare look like? I think when it comes to the healthcare that we provide to our veterans, the only incentive that should exist again is the quality of the healthcare that these men and women receive, these men and women that have put their lives on the line. So they deserve our very best. And unfortunately, you know, the VA is not providing that right now. I think there are some real leadership problems, some real management problems. I think the very real forces at play that are trying to privatize the VA, I mean, that would be I think a disaster for the healthcare needs of our veterans. And so I would actively, push against that and make sure that we do not go down that route. And this idea of how we serve our veterans in general has been an important part of this campaign, obviously, as a veteran. But I've tried to meet with as many veteran services officers as I can throughout the state. And, I had a very interesting, informative conversation with the veteran services officer out there in Brewster County to really understand, again, what are some of the unique needs of our veterans that are living in the rural areas, yes, that do face, a two-hour and a half-hour commute to the nearest VA hospital in El Paso. But there's also, the need, again, for, spousal benefits, as well as some of the unique mental health needs of some of our older veterans that are working in the rural area. So this is an issue, how we think about how do we service our veterans and how do we ensure that they're best served. These are the types of things that I would be championing, in Congress.
All right, so this next question is being based off some developing story, breaking news. So President Donald Trump said today that he plans to deploy U.S. troops along the southern border to prevent illegal crossings. And this is a quote from him. We're going to do this until we have the wall. We're going to be guarding our border with our military. And seeing how this congressional district that you're running to represent has the congressional district with the largest stretch of U.S. border, can you kind of react to that comment and just sort of tell me what you think about that, starting off with Gina Ortiz-Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what we're seeing here is, unfortunately, a president that has no understanding of what is actually the reality on the ground. I mean, this is, I think, actually 2017 was the lowest reported number of illegal crossings at the border in 41 years. So this does not reflect, again, the reality of the ground. This does not reflect the needs of this district. I think also, you know, this is exactly why you need people that have some experience in foreign affairs, in international security, that can immediately weigh in on these issues, right? I would expect somebody like Will Hurd to speak out and talk about why this is unnecessary. That is certainly that's something I would do. I mean, I think, you know, there are other ways in which we can strengthen, you know, the communities along the border. And it starts with investing in education. It starts with investing in the economic opportunities that really keep the community strong. And frankly, as I've talked to local mayors, they're talking. I mean, the mayor of Eagle Pass is talking about 40% of his city's revenue is based on the bridge traffic on those two bridges. So he's actually more interested in a second bridge, and is talking about the negative effects of a wall. So this is somebody that I think, you know, Trump is trying to fulfill a campaign promise that he made to his base, and is obviously showing desperation and being unable to do that.
Okay, and so Rick Trevino, your reaction to Donald Trump's comment about deploying U.S. troops along the southern border.
This really reminds me of Rick Perry sending the National Guard down to the border to secure it. You know, you see when Donald Trump is desperate and having a hard time in the media, what does he do? He goes back to, you know, the wall, issues that are wrapped around cultural provocation to really excite his base. And, you know, I think it's absolutely disgusting to see my district and the border, you know, all these border communities to continue to be demonized and framed as violent areas. I can recall when Donald Trump visited my hometown, Laredo, Texas. You know, the Fox News and the right-wing media was treating it like he was going into some type of war zone. They were calling him so brave when Laredo, El Paso, and a lot of these border communities are some of the safest places in the United States of America. So, again, what this is doing is very dangerous, and we have to make sure that we're sending people to D.C., they're going to call out this type of cultural provocation and dog whistle. Again, to send our military to the border is suggesting and insinuating that right now that the border is violent, that the community itself is violent, and that we need some type of martial law or that type of optics in our border. I mean, that's so inappropriate. And the amount of money that we've gone and already put into the border to secure it is already in the tens of billions of dollars. So again, what you're looking at is someone who is desperate and only knows one trick, that is cultural provocation, that's dog whistle politics, that's demonizing the Mexican-American community. And, you know, it hurts to see this happening in my country, where so many Mexican-Americans have done good things and have made this country what it is.
Okay, so let's go to closing comments. You'll each get a minute, and so let's go off now with Rick Trevino. Talk about why you should be the Democratic candidate to run in November.
Thank you again, Dave, for this opportunity. Again, I am best suited to take on Will Hurd because I am fighting for you and you only. I have my campaign has been conducted only taking money from working families, small dollar donations, and it's going to give me the ability to really counteract Will Hurd because he's a bot candidate and he sticks to a script that the donors have allowed him to to run on. I am someone that is just fighting for working people. The ideas that I'm running on: Medicare for all, a living wage of $15 an hour, free public college universities for all people, combating climate change and investing in clean energy jobs, and getting big money out of politics. These are all things that the American people want. I am I'm a smart guy. I've been very successful, and I have the chops to take on Will Hurd and call him out on his hypocrisy. And what another thing is that I am, you know, I'm the only Mexican American running in the race. I have the cultural background and an ability to connect with this district.
All right, let's go to Gina Ortiz-Jones, and you have a minute to give your closing comments.
Yeah. One of my earliest memories is helping quiz my mom on her naturalization test. I must have been 7 or 8. She was dropping my younger sister and I off at daycare. And it's why to this day I know Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death." And I think, you know, all of us in this moment in time are asking ourselves, you know, I knew I would come to find out that I would never have to take that test. But I think you and I, you know that we're being tested. We're being tested as Americans. We're being being tested as Texans. You know, what do we want for our present? What do we want for our future? What kind of world, what kind of country are we going to leave for those behind us? That is what is motivating me. Like, I've been a public servant for 14 years. And again, I've seen what happens in countries when good people don't step up and say, don't step up and take actions when their democratic institutions are under threat. So this race for me is very much about protecting the opportunities that allowed me to grow up healthy, get an education, and serve my country.
All right. And you've been listening to a issues forum between Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rick Trevino. They are the runoff candidates running in the Democratic runoff primary. That's going to be on May 22nd. Early voting is May 14th through the 18th. The winner of that runoff gets on the November ballot and will face Republican incumbent Will Hurd. We'll continue to have issue forums with runoff candidates until we run out of candidates and races to cover. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.